Welcome to Voice Rising with Kara Johnstad. Enjoy weekly conversations with leading luminaries, pioneering visionaries, singers, poets, musicians, and sound healers as we explore the profound role our voice plays on the path to self-realization and global enlightenment. The internationally acclaimed singer, composer, author, healer, recording artist, voice expert, creator of Voice Your Essence, and founder of the School of Voice, Kara Johnstad, uses her extraordinary spiritual gifts to empower others. Everything in this world vibrates. Everything has a frequency. A pioneer in the field of voice work and transformational songwriting. Her breakthrough methods are helping thousands of people worldwide fine-tune their body-mind-spirit system and unlock the energetic frequencies of limitless creativity, health, and abundance. Share your voice, ask your questions, join in the conversation. Receive life-changing, positive transformation and rise together to create a sound world. And here's your host, Kara Johnstad.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Voice Rising. I am Kara Johnstad, and today we are exploring bigger questions of meaning with the author and speaker Mirabai Starr, a writer of creative nonfiction and contemporary translations of sacred literature. She taught philosophy and world religions at the University of New Mexico, Taos, for 20 years and now teaches and speaks internationally on contemplative practice and interspiritual dialogue. Welcome, Mirabai, to our show today.
Thank you, Kara, so much for inviting me. It feels like such a great fit.
Yeah. So I want to start this conversation in a very hopefully relaxed place before we dive into those even deeper and bigger questions. I'd like to know if you have a strong childhood memory of being connected to your voice, if you remember somewhere where that powerful voice of yours was guiding you.
I was a very quiet, shy child, which some people have a hard time believing, but I'm still a quiet, shy child inside, actually. But I remember when I wrote my first poem, I must have been around 8 years old, and my parents, who were kind of counterculture beatnik slash hippies, you know, transitioning from the beatnik phase to the hippie phase in the United States, in that era of the 60s, read my poem and were kind of blown away by it, and had me, my mother was a folk singer, and they would do hootenannies in the 60s, you know, these sort of political musical gatherings in our home. And I remember my father had me stand up on the coffee table and read my poem to this, you know, this house of drunken, stoned political activists. And there was this collective sense of this girl has a voice and she's going to be using it in this world. And I could feel that affirmation. I could feel that blessing, really, from those adults. And it just unfurled from there. I continued to be shy, but I also continued to write and to share my work.
Oh, so beautiful, Mirabai. So you have a new book out, and your new book is called Wild Mercy. And this book is allowing everyone to hear the voice of the feminine. You also share with us the paths of the feminine mystics. Can you share with us a little bit more about the divine feminine principle, what that means to you?
Well, in many ways, the title itself evokes the essence or the quintessence of the feminine for me, which is this seemingly paradoxical marriage of qualities like wildness and mercy. So the title Wild Mercy, wildness evokes that unleashed, unboundaried, creative, sometimes chaotic, rule-breaking quality of the feminine. And then the mercy evokes that tenderness, that outpouring of love that is essential to the heart space of the sacred feminine. I love what my publisher, actually the founder of Sounds True, Tammy Simon, said when we were speaking about the idea of this book. And she said, I don't even think we need to use the word divine in front of feminine, divine feminine, or sacred, sacred feminine, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. the feminine is, by her very nature, holy. And that, to me, is really what this book is conveying. And when I speak about the feminine, of course, well, maybe I shouldn't say of course, because I think it goes without saying, but I'm going to say it just in case. I'm speaking about the feminine principle, as you said, Kara, which belongs to all of us. It's all of our right. birthright, women, men, people of all genders. And I'm speaking to and about that feminine principle of fierce compassion and wild mercy and creative tenderness and truth-telling, radical truth-telling. That mm-hmm. is so needed, bringing us back again and again to the landscape of the heart where transformation is possible and is happening.
Yeah, so why do you believe in this very pressing time that the wisdom of the feminine is so important for us to hear her?
Because the masculine model has not only not worked very well, but has backfired and has caused great harm. And mm-hmm. when I speak about a masculine paradigm, once again, I'm speaking about a structure, not a gender, not a sex. Mm-hmm. I'm speaking about a way of approaching reality as an object to be manipulated and controlled and shaped to our will. And of course, that masculine paradigm has also done great good in the world. A lot of the healthy structures that uphold society were engineered by that masculine mind. Mm-hmm. And on the mm-hmm. other hand, the very thrust or impulse of the masculine to transcend the body, to control and organize reality has ended up perpetrating harm on the human family, on our animal relatives, and certainly mm-hmm. on our mother, the earth, that mm-hmm. this effort to get something from the world has ended up depleting our soul resources and our beautiful planet. So, I mean, I could go into much more detail about that. That's so generalized. But, okay, let's just say that the masculine paradigm for me is about transcendence and the feminine is about immanence. The masculine is about purification and perfection and control and legislating. And the feminine is about embodying. It's about embodying, being with what is, honoring and blessing every particle of creation as the very dwelling place of spirit.
Right. So collectively, we're learning at this time to reclaim the sacredness of form. You're talking a lot about embodied wisdom versus transcendence, right? So to embody and to really honor that physicality that of the wisdom that we carry in our blood and in our bones and in our, I wanted to say the word embers, of course, in our burning hearts. Mm. And we allow our bodies to heal often through using our voices to speak out and collectively share those hidden truths or even to journal, to write. What happens when we dare to integrate all our many stories and use our voice to speak out and to share the stories that we've lived and that we've gone through?
Yes, our stories and our questions. Sometimes, you know, I think many of you who are listening had some experience probably in childhood where you dared to ask a question that shook the foundation of whatever mm-hmm. it was you were questioning, maybe in church. Like, why would God allow for suffering in the world, for a child mm-hmm. to die or for genocide? And you were shut down for asking the question. And so mm-hmm. that's that's one of the ways that the feminine is rising, is that women, but people of all genders who are coming from that feminine heart space, are risking asking questions that disrupt the prevailing structures that have upheld, you know, the power dynamics that favor mostly privileged white men and definitely oppress and silence anyone else. So, you know what I'm thinking of, Kara, is Hildegard von Bingen,
right,
who, of course, is a medieval Rhineland mystic who was only canonized mm-hmm. recently, 1,000 years after her death. And Hildegard had that experience, as you well know, because she was such an incredible singer and composer and mm-hmm. a master of all the arts, really. But when it began for her, her conversion experience, if you will, happened when she was very, very ill. Like for so many people, there's either a near-death experience or some experience of the collapsing of our health and well-being and sense of safety in the physical world. And so she was very ill, and she was hearing this voice that she always referred to as the living light her whole life, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was speaking to her as it had since she was a child, although she had managed to squelch it precisely because of many of those experiences of the adults freaking out when she would give her prophecies as they would come through her as a young child, and she learned to shut them down. But here it was bubbling up. She was around 35 years old, and maybe she was actually 39, I think. And the voice was saying, speak and write, speak and write. And she was like, no, I told you, leave me alone. But she was dying. She was literally dying, and the voice was growing louder and louder. And finally she called for, you know, some parchment and a quill or whatever people wrote with in the Middle Ages, and it was brought to her in her sickbed, and she began to write down what was coming through her. And she said, the sickness fell away, and I rose from my bed, and the living light poured through me, and I wrote down what it said. And then off she went the rest of her life until she was in her early 80s, which was quite elderly for the Middle Ages, for that time period. She wrote what the living light spoke to her, if you will. You know, and most of us don't have such a clear, obvious experience of, let's call it, channeling. But my sense is that whenever we tell our truth, speak our truth out loud, in writing, in song, we are allowing ourselves, I'm sure you have said this 100 times, Kara, to be conduits, to be a channel for that divine wisdom that is meant to be shared through each of our particular instruments. And in Hildegard's case, it was literally life-saving.
Right. I actually think that we are all, each and every one, conduits and channels, and often it's because we're so overfilled with so many other things that we can't hear our own clear voice.
Right.
And so if we were able to let go of the voices in our head, which everybody knows we have, you know, everyone's talking to us as if when we're hearing voices we're nutty, but the truth is anybody who's tried to sit for 5 minutes in meditation knows there's so many voices drifting in and out. And then just start to come closer, and writing and singing really helps tune that channel. I think it's one of... Do you have a powerful voice practice that you use to get closer and hone into the truth when you're writing?
I was trained at a very young age to just allow myself to be available to what was coming through. So Natalie Goldberg was my teacher when I was 12 years old at this little alternative.
Writing down the bones.
Yes, Natalie Goldberg, Writing Down the Bones, Wild Mind, and a dozen other books on the connection between writing and spiritual practice. And so because I was so young when I started working with Natalie, and she was young and she was just developing this idea of writing practice, I was trained in this kind of wild mind approach, which is you just start, you give yourself a topic, a prompt, or you're given a prompt by somebody else. You write it at the top of the page. You time yourself, like for 10 minutes or 15 or 20 minutes, and you write without stopping. You move your hand. So whether it's on a notebook with a pen or a piece or a computer, the point is to keep your hand moving the entire time. And what that does is it enables you to kind of bypass the monkey mind, that run faster than the monkey mind, maybe, than the inner critic who's trying to shut you down. And then you end up kind of sifting through the layers, the surface layers of the mind, to this deeper mind that is deeply wise and often kind of dangerous, it takes risks, and that's where all my writing comes from, even my translation. You know, I'm a translator of the Spanish mystics, John of the Cross, Teresa of Avila, and also I've done Julian of Norwich from Middle English. She was a contemporary of Chaucer, the first woman to write in English, actually. Mm-hmm. And in every case, even when I'm translating, and I'm a very precise translator, I am accessing my wild mind as I'm choosing the right words and the flow of the sentence. One of the reasons I'm so excited about speaking with you, Kara, is that for me, my writing has always been musical, lyrical. Mm. And so many spiritual books, so many books that are designed to help people wake up and stand up and in service, and all of these wonderful teachings that we read in all of these great spiritual books, often the writing itself is really dry and pedantic. And I find that really unfortunate. So when people like Clarissa Pinkola Estes, who wrote the, you know, that best-selling book in the 80s, yeah. Women Who Run With the Wolves. She was a writerly writer, is still. You know, her writing is such a joy to read because it's music. Mm-hmm. It's so much more than just getting across a concept or a set of teachings. So for me, voice and literature are intimately entwined, and I know for you, you know, that is the case. Well, you've read my writing, so you know what I'm I'm talking about.
And I not only read your writing, I was able to savor your writing, and I was able to absorb and carry your writing with me. And if texts are too analytical or coming from a very, I would say, an intellectual place. I mean, I always say to people, I'm highly intelligent, but I'm not the intellectual type. I love studying. I love learning. But it's hard for me to finish books that are very analytical. And it was a pleasure to finish and reread many times phrases from your book. So I appreciate the poetic. I appreciate your ability to literally have words sing off the page. And you've written that when we sing sacred music, we sit beneath a rushing fountain of love that washes over us and leaves us in a relaxed state of holy hush. I love those words. They're your words, holy hush. Do you sing?
I do. I lead kirtan. I participate in kirtan. The devotional chanting in the Hindu tradition, as you well know, but I'm not sure if all your listeners are familiar with kirtan. Yes. And what's really interesting, so it's early morning here in New Mexico, in the United States, where I am, in the mountains of New Mexico. And before I woke up this morning, so maybe an hour before I came on with you, I was dreaming that I was singing at outside the gates of a temple. And it was a Hindu temple. I'm actually in Taos, New Mexico, where there's a Hanuman temple that's dedicated to the Saint Neem Karoli Baba, who many people are familiar with through Ram Das and Krishna Das as their guru. Neem Karoli Baba is also my guru since I was a little girl. And there's a Hanuman temple here, a Neem Karoli Baba temple, and we've just recently, in the last few days, installed Hanuman, a statue of Hanuman, the monkey god, the essence of loving devotion, in a new, beautiful temple. And so there's been a lot of music and prayer and celebration going on. But so I think I was dreaming kind of about that. But I was asked, or I was invited, or I just decided to sing outside the temple gates while something was going on inside the temple. And then when I opened my eyes after I was singing, people were crying and they were grateful. They were all women. It was like, that was so beautiful. And then all of a sudden, a Sufi ceremony was being enacted in front of me. So what this tells me, this dream tells me, is that there is a place where I plug into joy through chanting, and especially chanting to the Divine Mother, to the feminine. Mm-hmm. And that when I do, it, the warmth of that heart space, of that fire of love, melts the boundaries, not only between my heart and the hearts of the other people, but between religions and particular spiritual traditions that have their own languages and their own forms and rituals. In the dream, they blended. I mean, and there probably could have been other traditions besides Hinduism and Sufism. In my dream, they would have all been welcome, not only by me, because it's very easy for me to say yes to multiple spiritual spaces, but by the community of the dream. Everybody was saying yes. There is no difference. So it was a very powerful dream to have before speaking with you, Kara.
Yay, Mirabai. Yeah, that's the power of music. I think that, you know, we don't always find the words. Our languages might be a little bit different, although we have the same seed sounds in all our languages. But melody and rhythm, it's universal. And what touches me the most is always that music and the voices can connect us to ourselves. But when we dare to bring it out and sing collectively and, you know, share poetry and, you know, all these things, that we are one. We are all diverse and different, and yet we are all united and connected. And I'm sure you know that also when you're working with, you know, when you're working in your workshops or when you're speaking, we're able to connect our heartbeats and bring them into the same rhythm, the same pulse, the same, we're able to calm our breaths and connect. And that's just such a phenomenal gift that we have as a humanity, right? With all the tensions that people see, we have so much potential of what I always say is to transmute harm to harmony, right? We're able to shift harm to harmony. And, you know, it's just a few letters away, or we're able to flip the letters from scared and to step into sacred, because it's the same sound, it's the same movement, right? So art helps us transmute our hardships into something golden, whether it's writing or painting or whatever. Talk to us a little bit about the vital connection between creativity and mysticism.
Yeah, I love how you talked about the gold and the transmutation, because that's exactly how I see all of the creative arts, is the transmutation of the difficult parts of our lives and our stories into something golden, and then that then nourishes us but also helps heal the world. So the connection between, did you say creativity and mysticism? Let's see. So for me, the creative principle is, by its very nature, feminine. You know, the Shakti in the Hindu tradition, which is the life force, that essence that courses through all of us and through all of life. And when we can say yes to that, when we can surrender to that, that vibrancy of life itself as the embodiment of the feminine, then we experience what you just spoke about. It's like this beautiful paradox, once again, paradox of multiplicity and unity. We experience our felt interconnection with all of life when we say yes to life in that way, which is that creative impulse. And we also experience our unique expression of it, and everybody else's unique expression of the embodiment of that divine energy. And it's not like one or the other. It's not like we're all one, and therefore all multiplicity and individuality is an illusion. We are all one, and the rich diversity of the infinite ways that we express that unity through our particular given embodiment is what makes such a gorgeous symphonic universe. And it doesn't always feel symphonic. Right. I mean, it often feels really dissonant, but that's music too.
Exactly. Wow. I think you should be a writer and a speaker, my love. You are so beautiful. So we shy away from pain. I know you've written a lot about grief and loss, and we are uncomfortable often even saying that we're depressed or we're afraid of the darkness. And yet it's often when we are radically shattered that the boundless grace of the divine love comes pouring in. It seems like loss can strip us bare of everything, and yet we stand naked, and that's when we're really in direct contact often with God or Source. How has loss brought you closer to finding your true voice?
Excuse me. Well, you know, so much to say, and I think we're about to go on a break, so I'll try to keep this.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. Yeah.
That's okay. I'll just begin by saying that my first book was a translation of Dark Night of the Soul by San Juan de la Cruz, St. John of the Cross, the 16th century Spanish mystic. And when John spoke of the Dark Night of the Soul, he wasn't just talking about a period of, you know, having a hard time or depression or anything external necessarily. What he was speaking about is a process of spiritual maturation, maturity, ripening, where we're no longer attached to particular ways that we used to feel the presence of the divine, like through through spiritual practices like chanting, for instance, as I do, as many of you do, or even spiritual concepts, religious constructs, that in a dark night of the soul, those things dry up and fall away, and it feels like loss, but what we're really experiencing is a falling away of that which separates us from a direct encounter with the divine, which is the definition of mysticism. It's a direct encounter with the sacred, naked, intimate encounter. And we're not used to that. We're used to mediated ways of connecting to the sacred. And so for me, there is nothing like grief and loss, the loss of a loved one to death or the ending of a relationship, to just work like an acid to just melt away and strip away all my ideas on the matter. I mean, I wouldn't recommend it, and I wish it wasn't this way, Cara, but that sometimes when we have a shattering loss, we are made naked, we are stripped. And at that point, even though we're conditioned to get away from that feeling as quickly as possible, we actually have the opportunity to connect with the sacred in a way that we've only dreamed of, because there's nothing left to separate us.
Right. I think that is so true. That is so true. Let's take that with us in our station break. And we'll be back in a couple of minutes with Mirabai Starr, author and speaker, and modern day no nonsense mystic.
Conscious lifestyle to your world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free. AscendingHearts.com.
I'm Kathy Williams, host of Sexy Mom Abundant Life radio show on Thursdays at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. On the show, we explore living abundantly in every area of your life. Ways to let go of limiting patterns and beliefs and to step into the flow of creativity and possibility, knowing you are supported by the universe.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. You are at Voice Rising. I am Kara Johnstead, and I'm in studio today with Mirabai Star, author, speaker, and simply wondrous soul. So we'll leave it like that. Mirabai, hungry for truth and thirsty for divine love, can you share with us more about the soft, mysterious embrace of the beloved and the blazing path of devotion?
Well, you know, my namesake, Mirabai, was also a 16th century mystic. I say also because I spoke earlier about John of the Cross, who I've translated, who was a Spanish mystic in the 16th century, and his guru, his mentor, his spiritual mother was Santa Teresa de Avila, St. Teresa of Avila, also in the same time period. And but Mirabai was not in Spain, she was in India, and she was really the quintessence of bhakti, of a devotional being, and a poet and a singer. So when I was 13, I went to this alternative school here in the mountains of New Mexico, and it was very much based in the creative arts. So that was the way I naturally was as a child anyway. I was a wildly creative child, but the school definitely nurtured that. And we wrote a play about the life, a musical actually, about the life of Mirabai based on one of those comics from India that depict the lives of the saints and the gods and goddesses. Mm-hmm. And I was cast as Mirabai. And my boyfriend, my first love, Philip, was cast as Krishna, to whom Mirabai, of course, was devoted, the Lord of Love itself. And Philip died during that time. He was killed in an accident. And it was a shattering experience for me. My first love died. Mm-hmm. And I turned 14 right around that time. And then, you know, a couple of weeks later, the Mirabai play opened. And I was in the most shattered space I could possibly imagine, and yet I was expected to go out on stage and not only say my lines, but sing to Krishna. Mm-hmm. And something happened when I walked out on that stage, which happened to be the dome of the Lama Foundation, which is an iconic place where Ram Dass wrote Be Here Now, an adobe glass structure up in the mountains, very beautiful, sacred space where thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands of hours of prayer and spiritual practice have happened over the years. And I, when I opened my mouth to sing the first bhajan, the first song of Mirabai, calling out to Krishna, it was a very tangible experience of stepping out of my own way and Mirabai coming through. And that was when I was given my name, in fact, by Ram Dass, was after that play. Because it was sort of obvious to everybody that something was going on here. And it doesn't happen, you know, now 50 years later, every time, not 50, 40 years later, every time I open my mouth, but it sometimes happens. And it happens to different degrees, where the degree to which I'm able to get out of my own way, she or someone, some sacred feminine principle comes pouring through, and she does the singing. And so I've forgotten what you even asked me, but this is what I'm compelled to share with that. The melting into the beloved. So for me, singing my voice or speaking my voice in writing or out loud when I give Dharma talks or teachings, it's mm-hmm. always intimately connected to my love of the beloved and mm-hmm. and the melting of the boundaries between not only myself and the divine, but myself and all beings, so that I'm not special doing some special thing here. I am connecting with that essential interbeing to which we all belong. And I'm inviting other people to participate, to take your rightful place in that net of interbeing that holds us, that we belong to each other. And there's something about the creative process that invites us into that place of belonging.
Yeah.
Belonging to the beloved, and thereby belonging to each other and to the earth.
Well, that's the great secret. I think you've touched on it, right? The interconnectedness also. There are so many people suffering from stage fright, and yet when we do allow ourselves to be those channels and simply get the mind out of the way and embody it, it often we feel the community and the audience just coming closer. How can we reclaim longing, Mirabai? For those of us who might feel very, very far away from that place, how can we reclaim longing?
Such an important question, Kara. And I think that in the Western world, we have been so conditioned, both by the academic education and politics, and mm-hmm. even in spirituality, to reject those feelings of longing that rise in the human heart. Mm-hmm. And so let's take spirituality, for instance. You know, there's the whole non-duality movement, and there's so much beauty in the non-dual philosophy, that we are all already not only connected to God, but that we are God. You know, thou art mm-hmm, that, mm-hmm. it says in the Upanishad. Mm-hmm. And yet there is this almost rigid philosophy that is developed in certain many spiritual circles that say that if we long for God, that that's somehow an inferior or delusional spiritual state, this mm-hmm. longing, and that a true evolved spiritual state is one in which we recognize that there's nothing to get. We're not separate to begin with. We just need to wake up to that truth of our oneness with all that is. And I believe mm-hmm. that too, philosophically. But in mm-hmm. my body and in my heart, there has always been this burning ember of yearning for God.
Right.
So we're conditioned to see that as a problem or as a lack of reality, mm-hmm. rather than embrace it, or as you say, reclaim our longing as the very portal to that experience of union, not an idea that we're already connected, but the experience of connection. I mean, why is it, I ask rhetorically, that all the mystics of all the spiritual traditions that I know of anyway speak in poetry and in mm-hmm. song, primarily mm-hmm. because discursive language fails to express the realities mm-hmm. of the heart, and that through mm-hmm. their very poetry, whether it's Rumi or Rilke or Mirabai mm-hmm. or Rabia or mm-hmm. Lala or all of these great poets,
yeah. Yeah.
Why is it poetry that is the only language they can find to speak that heart's yearning, and that when we read that poetry or listen to those songs, something stirs and awakens in our own hearts, and that it often feels like painful yearning or longing, mm-hmm. but it's also mm-hmm. incredibly sweet and alive, and we wouldn't have it any other way. So mm-hmm. how do we reclaim that? We reclaim it by allowing our own voice of longing to be spoken through writing, through speaking, through singing, through listening to the poets and the musicians. Sometimes it's music without any words that moves us to tears. What is that feeling of being moved to tears by poetry or music. That is the heart's longing, and that is our birthright. And that very yearning is the opening to the union that we're longing for, in my experience.
Right. Yeah. So we're at these challenging times. In the moment, we just did have earthquakes actually rocking California. The earth is cracking wide open, and women's voices are rising, rooted and strong. Or we could say also, which I loved in the beginning when you said this is not a gender issue, it's about the feminine quality. It's not about, you know, male against females. It's about the feminine quality, meaning there are many men out there who are also embodying that feminine quality of being. So women's voices are rising, rooted and strong, and through using our voice as a powerful tool, through speaking, through poetry, through the music, we're activating a paradigm shift that the world has never seen. How can we mend the world through creating a web of interconnection that is based on the feminine principles, poetry, music, dance, singing?
Mm. Yeah, the first... One of the first things that comes up in me when you say that, and I know you're speaking some of my own words back to me, is that we don't even need to create the web of interbeing, because it's already there. The great divine feminine principle has woven that web. You know, here in the southwestern United States, there are many versions of the legends of spider grandmother in the indigenous communities here. She's the creator of all that is. She weaves the world into being. And so our only task is to take our rightful place. The invitation is awaiting us in that web of interbeing. And there is something about creative self-expression that connects us with all the other creative selves that are expressing, and that we become this harmonious whole. You know, there's this emphasis that I think is very masculine, again, in all of the spiritual traditions and religions, that emphasizes private awakening, enlightenment, personal salvation, right? It's the personal salvation project. I can't remember, some theologian called it that. And what we forget is that often when we're engaged in spiritual practice, you know, rigorous spiritual practice, and I think rigor is necessary, just as it is for any artist to be disciplined, to show up, to practice and hone our craft. But sometimes we buy into this masculine paradigm that emphasizes perfection and purification, as if these beautiful, riotous, messy, glorious selves that we are somehow imperfect and impure, and we need to be cleansed and corrected. And so I think a big part of reclaiming feminine wisdom is then the creative realm is a perfect space for this to happen, this reclamation, is to say yes to ourselves exactly as we are. To see ourselves not as broken and flawed and impure as we've been conditioned by the masculine to see ourselves, but as exactly as we were made to be, sacred and holy and resourced, and therefore a resource to others. So there's something about saying yes to ourselves that helps heal the world. You know, in Jewish wisdom, there's that beautiful term, tikkun olam in Hebrew, which literally means the mending of the world. And it's rooted in a belief that each of us is perfectly made by the Holy One to offer to the world that which repairs what's broken, and that we each are already imprinted in our souls with what is ours to give, to mend the world. And how do we believe that is true when we're conditioned to always, you know, be on the self-improvement project? And if we let up for 1 minute, we're going to mess it all up.
Yeah.
Not true.
Or also, I think what touched me also in your book was what you just touched upon. We often think that, you know, we need to be alone and stand at the highest mountain peak and kind of suffer in a way to find our truth. And you talk a lot in the book about the beauty also of community, the beauty of joining together, you know, to have the soup or, and that's what I remember a little bit, the,
yeah,
you know, the beauty of just being together and realizing we're on this path together as we journey home. And I think that's very comforting to know in our world that we can join together more, we can cook together, we can eat together, we can sing together. Your newest book, Wild Mercy, which is now out, is a cry of so many women, but it's also a cry, I think, of all of us, our souls longing for a healthy and creative and yeah, sometimes messy and fun way of living. Is there a homepage where our listeners can purchase your books or, yeah, see where you're doing retreats and workshops and help you plant more seeds for an inspiring and compassionate world?
Oh, thank you for asking, Cara. Yes, it's just my name, mirabystar.com. So
mm-hmm.
People can.
And then they find everything they need to find.
Yeah, there's all my events. I do a lot of live gatherings, and I was just thinking, in fact, Cara, when you asked that question about creativity and awakening, mm-hmm. well, that's how I translated it mm-hmm. anyway, is that in my gatherings, and I think a lot of people are doing this now, it's not just the teachings of the mystics and meditation, although I do a lot of silent mm-hmm. meditation woven in with all the words and singing, but I do a lot mm-hmm. of singing and movement, and it, mm-hmm. to me, it's very feminine that all of the ways, all of the modes of touching the sacred mm-hmm. be included. Mm-hmm. So our bodies and our voices are so much included in my work. It's not just the mystics and the silence.
Yeah, I think that's very beautiful. Shifting our focus back to that ordinary and blessing it, right, with our attention, our steps, our what we're listening to. All our senses are there, very mm-hmm. present. Well, Mirabai, thank you so much for being with me here at Voice Rising. I wish you loads of health, success, love, and lots of inspired moments of melting with the divine
presence. Oh, thank
you,
Karen. Thank you for the wonderful work you're doing in this world with all of us. And bless all of you who are listening. It's been a joy.
Okay. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye.